Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to be here. I flew in this morning from Pittsburgh, so feeling the 2 a.m. wake up, but it's great to be here and looking forward to talking with you and being on this great panel that we have this morning. And thanks to Joel for the invitation to be part of it. But I'm gonna introduce the work that the American Heart Association is doing and then turn it over to my colleague, Katie Bishop, who's going to tell you how we're implementing this work at the state level and our policy work. So just real quickly, we have no disclosures. We are an organization, and I would say that we are a volunteer-based organization. Obviously, science is the foundation of a lot of what we do at the American Heart Association, but I just want to highlight the fact that we have 30 million volunteers across the United States that are helping us in our work each day, and we are so grateful. And the reason I highlight that is because our work in this area goes all the way down to the community level, and some of those 30 million volunteers are helping us implement this priority in with our local boards at the community level. So we have presence at the federal level, we have presence at the state level in all 50 states, we have government relations staff in all 50 states in the United States, and then we have our work at the community level as well. We have a goal that by 2020 we're going to improve the cardiovascular health of the population by 20%. That is a pretty aggressive goal. We are not there. We're not on track to meet that goal right now. And, you know, so we have a lot of work to do. We think, and I will say this, that we are holding ourselves quantifiably accountable in everything that we do to reach that goal. And that applies to our policy work as well. How many millions of people are we affecting with procurement and food service guidelines? And we've done our best to calculate that out. We use 7 measures to calculate cardiovascular health, and one of them you can see is our diet measure. And you know, if in the discussion time you want to talk about what constitutes that diet measure, I'm glad to do that with you. But obviously, reaching people where they spend a large part of their time in workplaces is really important to us. And we've calculated that through several different approaches we can do that. So we have our policy work at the federal level. We've had the opportunity to work with Joel on the federal guidelines, and right now, you know, providing comment to those guidelines as they're revised and updated, but also our state level work. And this began actually with our Communities Putting Prevention to Work grant from CDC, where we were able to offer technical assistance. And in that case, it was really with hospital systems, helping them address primarily vending, taking sodas out of their vending machines, sugar sweetened beverages out of vending. But then we've gone on to do this work under our Anchor grant. And I mentioned to you already our Community 2.0 initiative, where we're empowering local boards of directors to take this on in their organizations and also in community policy. And just to give you a sense of how we go about our policy work at the AHA, we start with policy research. We start with policy development. And we develop a policy statement. Essentially, we put the AHA on record that we want to work on this issue, and this is why. This is the evidence base behind it. Evidence base is key to all of our policy work. We have to make sure that it's strategically aligned with our goals, which in this case it certainly is. And we look at other things like feasibility. We look at coalition and partner involvement. We look at the resources it's going to take to pass this policy at the state level, at the federal level, at the local level. So we have actually a whole checklist that we go through to determine whether we're going to take a particular policy issue on. And obviously, we've chosen to take on procurement and food service guidelines. So we start with our policy statement. In this case, we published our policy statement in Nutrition Reviews. This is a pretty rigorous process that we undertake to develop policy statements for the association. We convene the leading experts in the field, some of the leading experts, and they inform our work. It goes through multiple levels of peer review. It goes through our scientific councils. And eventually, we end up either with a published or unpublished policy statement. And then we turn this over to our state and federal staff, because this is the next really important step. It's one thing to say, okay, we want to do this policy. It's another thing to really get in the weeds and say, okay, how are we going to do that? And that's going to be where we start to engage the other aspects of advocacy work, which are media advocacy, grassroots, and lobbying, and regulatory work. So policy research is one of 4 components of effective advocacy, and we just create the foundation, and then we turn it over to colleagues to, and Katie's going to talk in more detail how we're we're doing that. As Joel mentioned, we've developed our own food and beverage toolkit. You know, we interact with thousands of companies across the United States, whether it's with our heart walks or our local boards, etc. So this gives us the opportunity to reach right now. We've reached about 4,500 employers with about 8.5 million employees. Is an opportunity to implement our food and beverage toolkit. We also have our recent agreement with Aramark and Nestle, which represent about 2 billion meals a year, gives us the opportunity to increase fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and reduce sodium. And right now we've got, and Katie can correct me if this needs to be updated, but about 11 states and 22 communities working on procurement and vending standards between now and 2017. So I'm going to turn it over to Katie now, and she's going to talk to you in detail about how we develop our state advocacy campaigns.
Thank you, Lori. So at the American Heart Association, food service guidelines are a priority for us through our state and community advocacy, and also through Voices for Healthy Kids. And I should mention that, so Joel said there are a bunch of different areas that you could work on food service guidelines. We put schools and childcare into a different areas of our work. So when I'm talking about food service guidelines today, I'm talking specifically about nutrition standards on government property, so in agency buildings and the Department of Parks and Recreation, those types of places. So with food service guidelines campaigns to date, a lot of them have been much more out of the public eye than some of our other nutrition policy initiatives. So they've been much more meetings, obviously, with elected officials and the executive in a community or in a state, so with the mayor's office or the governor's office, but also a lot of meetings with the Department of Health, meetings with the vendors. So in some cases, that's moving vendors from being in opposition to being neutral on the policy, or in other cases, like in Washington, D.C., the vendors actually testified in support of our food service guidelines initiative. And then also having a lot of meetings with the other agencies that have food service. So it could be somebody like the Department of Parks and Recreation that has a lot of vending machines and concession stands on their property, or also agencies like the Department of Corrections that do a lot of feeding programs in their facilities. So as I mentioned, to date, these have really been out of the public eye, but there have been some campaigns that have had a lot of grassroots engagement and a lot of media coverage. And in the future, I think that there is more potential to have more public campaigns, but just to date, it's really been a lot of meetings with those key stakeholders working through the nitty-gritty details of these policies. So in the policy work that we do at the American Heart Association, we focus on making changes in three different areas. And there are pros and cons to taking each of these different approaches, which we weigh out when we're thinking about the campaigns that we're entering into. So the first area that we work in is around regulations. And that can be a great area because it could be a vehicle that's already moving where an agency has opened up regulations and we have the opportunity to comment and get food service guidelines added into those regulations. With regulations, though, it can be much more of a piecemeal approach where you're going agency by agency, and it can be harder to have consistent nutrition standards across those different agencies. Another area that we work in is executive orders. And with executive orders, you can impact multiple agencies with one policy, and you can have consistent nutrition standards across those agencies, but there also are challenges where the executive, so the mayor or the governor, might not have authority over all government property. So for instance, the mayor might not have authority over the parks district. And then another thing to think about with executive orders is there is the potential that when a future mayor or governor comes into office that doesn't agree with the policy, they could potentially repeal that policy. And then the final area that we work on these initiatives through policy is with legislation. And through legislation, there is the ability to impact all government property with that policy, have consistent nutrition standards across all agencies, and it's much harder to repeal that policy because you would need to pass another law to repeal those standards. But as I mentioned, when we're thinking about making these types of changes, we look at the state or locality that we're going to be working in. And in some cases, that's doing a full legislative campaign. In other cases, the executive branch might be much more willing to work on this type of initiative, so we go with that approach. Or it could be, jumping on that vehicle that's already moving, so getting them in regulations in a particular agency, and we could use that as almost a pilot project to see how it's going to go in that state. So in looking at food service guideline policies, there are some key elements that we want to include in those. So the first thing is obviously having strong nutrition guidelines. So with strong nutrition guidelines, we're going to have a greater health impact. So there are three sets of guidelines that we use at the American Heart Association. The toolkit that Lori mentioned earlier, the AHA Food and Beverage Toolkit. Also the GSA HHS Health and Sustainability Guidelines, which Joel mentioned, and Diane Harris will be talking about a little bit later. And then also the National Alliance for Nutrition and Activity Healthy Vending Guidelines. And so not only do we want strong nutrition guidelines to be used, but we also would like to see people using some of the guidelines that are already out there. So this can really do a lot to help with implementation because implementation materials already exist for these. So there are product lists available. It can help so that the Department of Health or other implementing agency don't need to recreate the wheel each time a policy like this is implemented. And then it can also really help vendors to stay in compliance with these nutrition standards. So if vendors need to be meeting different nutrition standards in a whole bunch of different locations that they're working in, it's going to be harder for them to stay in compliance with those standards. So if you're using one of these national sets of standards that they might be using in some of their other locations, it's going to be easier for them to understand those standards and make sure they're in compliance with those standards. Another thing that we'd like to see in these policies is calorie labeling, so giving consumers some of the health information about the products that they're going to be purchasing. If you think about a vending machine, you don't know the calorie information on that until after you've purchased it. So by having that up front, it gives consumers more information so they could potentially make that healthier purchase. Another thing to include is the percent of items that are going to be meeting the nutrition standards. So ideally this would be 100%. That's going to have the greatest health impact and it's going to be easier to monitor. But in some places they might not be able to start with 100% healthy. So maybe they're doing a phased-in approach or maybe they're starting with a lower percentage with the hopes of going back and changing that at a later date. So the Center for Science and the Public Interest did a report where they looked at the vending machine options on state and local public property, and they found that 42% of the beverage options were healthier items, and only 15% of the food options were healthier items. So this really shows that on the food front, there's a great need to have these types of policies because there really aren't many options, healthier options available at this point in time. And then with beverages, it really shows that if you're starting with a 50% healthy benchmark, you really might not be moving the needle all that much. So if you're not going with a 100% healthy policy, it's important to choose a percentage that is going to move that needle and help to make a healthier food environment. So with beverages, you might want to be starting with a 75% healthy policy. So other things to consider if you're not going with a 100% healthy policy are pricing, placement, and promotion principles. So making sure that the healthier options are priced less than the less healthy options, having them be placed in prominent locations, and also only promoting the healthier options. So those could be the pictures on the front of a beverage vending machine or any of the discounted prices that happen in a cafeteria. So putting these types of principles in place can help to nudge consumers towards making those healthier purchases if some of the less healthy items are available in vending machines or in cafeterias. So some of the other provisions that we want to see in a food service guideline policy are something around the contracts. So making sure that those contracts include the nutrition standards, information about what would happen if there's a breach of contract, and also enforcement information. So we want to make sure that the vendors know up front the nutrition standards that they're going to need to meet, and also what would happen if they're not in compliance with those standards. There also should be a provision to review and update those standards over time. So we all know that nutrition science advances, people's dietary patterns change, and the products that are on the market change. So we want to make sure that these policies are staying consistent with as those different factors change and evolve. There also should be a provision in there around implementation. So it's great to pass a policy, but if the policy isn't implemented, it's not helping anyone. So by having a provision in there around the agency that's in charge of implementation or a timeline for implementation, it can help to ensure that that policy does get implemented. And then finally, there should be a provision in there around enforcement. So we don't want to have a policy go into effect, have the vendor be in compliance for the first couple of months, then realize there's no monitoring or enforcement going on, and have them drop out of compliance. So having an enforcement provision in there, again, can make sure that these policies are sustainable and staying in place in the long term. So just very quickly, some of the lessons learned in our advocacy campaign so far are that sometimes these policy processes can be long and slow moving. So having those meetings with the Department of Health, moving vendors along, moving other agencies along, it can sometimes take longer than people initially think that it will. It doesn't mean that that will definitely be the case in your state or locality, but just don't be surprised if that does end up happening and don't get discouraged. So it's also important to think beyond employees. So workplace wellness can be a key driver of these types of initiatives, but there's much more food being served and sold on public property than just to employees. So families are being impacted in parks and recreational facilities and in libraries in their communities. And then there's also all of the feeding programs. So if you're thinking about feeding through senior centers or feeding through correctional facilities. It's also really important to include detail in the policy itself. So we've seen some cases where a policy has been passed and it really hasn't had much detail in it. And that's resulted in some cases, weak nutrition standards or the policy not being implemented. And then, as I mentioned earlier, it's also important to ensure that we're having implementation and compliance by putting those provisions in the policy itself, and also just ensuring that these policies are being reviewed and updated over time. So it takes a lot of work to pass a policy. We don't want to pass a new law every single time. We need to make some tweaks to that policy. And then the last thing that I would mention is it's important to evaluate these efforts. So that doesn't need to be in the policy language itself, but there could be a provision in the policy about vendors needing to report certain information so that you have that information so you could evaluate it in the future. So there has been some evaluation in this area so far, but we'd like to see a lot more. Anecdotally, people are saying that these policies are going well, that vendors aren't seeing a negative impact on revenue, but it'd be great to have more evaluation so that we can use those examples to help the movement and get these policies passed in more states and localities. So here is my contact information and Lori's contact information. We'll be here for the Q&A period, but if you do have other questions, feel free to reach out to us.